Hello there, this is Bane. When I'm not out on the streets of Gotham hunting the Batman, I find myself listening to Part-Time Fanboy on a regular basis. Be sure to check out Part-Time Fanboy at www.parttimefanboy.com for somewhat weekly podcasts and reviews about various fanboy-related subjects. Also be sure to like them on Facebook and follow them on the Twitter. Do it now, or I'll have to do something awful to your spine.
Part-Time Fanboy, and I am on the line with Stephen E. Gordon. Mr. Gordon is a distinguished and well-respected animation professional. He's got a list of credits longer than both my arms put together. He's worked for everyone from Ralph Bakshi to Warner Brothers to Disney to DreamWorks to Marvel Productions. He's done everything from storyboarding to character design to directing. He really is a jack of all trades when it comes to animation. A lot of us comic fans may know him best for his work on such great series as X-Men Evolution, Ultimate Avengers, and Wolverine and the X-Men, on top of many, many others. I've been a fan of Mr. Gordon and his art for a long time, and I am very thrilled to have him here on Part-Time Fanboy. And I should also mention that, on top of everything else, you're a saint, because we recorded this interview about 2 weeks ago, and something happened with the sound file, and that previous interview got destroyed. So thank you so very much for being on with me again. I really appreciate it.
No problem. I'm good for it.
So you've got a Kickstarter campaign going on, right?
Well, it's not mine per se, but I'm involved with it.
Uh-huh.
I'm the artist of that was chosen to do the artwork for the graphic novel and help design the character. So, yes.
So what's it called?
The more people that are interested, the better. So.
what is the project called so people can look it up on Kickstarter?
It's called The Craver, C-R-A-V-E-R.
Uh-huh.
And it's kind of a monster movie type of character concept. It's going to, you know, eventually, you know, after the graphic novel is done and whatnot, they want to move on into creating a film for it, and they're going to get Doug Jones, the guy from Hellboy that played Abe Sapien, and he's going to be the actual actor in the suit and stuff, and it's kind of a cool concept. It's got World War II and Nazis and all that other stuff in it, so it's kind of interesting.
Oh, wow, that sounds great. Are you drawing the book?
Yeah, I'll be doing the graphic novel. Uh-huh. And, you know, I designed the character, the monster.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. But, I guess they've been working on it for quite some time.
Uh-huh.
So, and they got together with me. I was doing some work with a local comic store, doing some artwork for them and stuff. And they're involved with them, too, and connected. And the writer works at the comic store. So, that was the connection.
And is this House of Secrets in Burbank?
Yes, correct.
Oh, okay, great. Wow, that's awesome. And House of Secrets also, like, collaborated with you on your last sketchbook, right?
Right. They're the publisher of that, or the printer publisher of that last book.
Yeah, I actually got that in the mail, finally, and I loved it. You kind of went a different direction format-wise from your first two sketchbooks, correct?
Right.
Yeah, any big decision on, like, reason for that, or just you wanted to go a different way?
Well, thought it was time to get away from doing the usual that I'd done previously, because for some reason a lot of people tended to think of that as a how-to book, even though it wasn't intended to be that way.
Really?
And so I thought, okay, I'll just go straight sketchbook this time.
Uh-huh.
And I'm trying to put together another one, just a 48-page thing for the WonderCon, which is coming up that I'll be at in March, and Big Wow, which is, I believe, the end of May. Just another quick one, simple sketchbook. So between the two of them, I'll have something to sell and some prints. And eventually my goal is to take those first two, the Expressions and Attitudes books, and kind of create a hardcover version compiling the two.
Oh, wow. So, oh, that's great. And I got to say, I have all of them, and I love, well, I'm a big fan of your artwork as it is, but I love all the stuff in there. So anyone who hasn't picked it, well, those are out of print, the first two, correct?
Yeah, I finally sold out on those two.
Uh-huh.
The first two, so got these conventions lined up, and I'm kind of short on things to sell. I've got a few prints, and I've got the House of Secrets sketchbook. So if I'll throw together something quick for the other, so I'll have a little more material to sell.
Wow, that's great.
Fans and such.
When I ran into you at WonderCon last year, I mean, you were pretty busy. It seems like you've got a lot of commissions and stuff going on.
Yeah, I do. That's mostly what I do there, is I do con sketches and, you know, commissions and whatnot. And, but I think it's important to have a few things to sell at your table.
Sure, sure. And are these people who have known you, your work previously, or do they just see your booth and they like your stuff, or how does it usually land, like as far as percentages, or like?
It varies. Yeah, there are some people that seek me out that know I'm going to be there, and they show up, or they commission me ahead of time. You know, usually, if I'm going to be at a convention about the month before or something, I'll open up to accepting commissions. And so some of those I'll work on actually at the commission or wrap up there. And then others are just people walking by who, you know, like what they see, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I've never actually surveyed everyone to see why they're asking for commission. They're usually too busy, and never occurred to me before, I guess. Interesting enough.
Oh, yeah. So nobody walks up to you like I did, like with like a big freak out. I'm like, oh my gosh, you're Steven.
I get some of that. You're not the only one. Don't worry. It's interesting.
Yeah. So where can they get that third sketchbook right now? Because that's the only one that's currently available. Where can they find that?
Well, they can go directly to House of Secrets in Burbank.
Okay.
They can go to CTN's store, which is the Creative Talent Network. They have a store online that they can purchase it through. And that's, if they do that, then I put a little sketch in it or whatever, and then they can go from there.
Yeah.
And I believe Stuart Ng has it in his store.
Oh, really? Also. Oh, yeah. That's right. They do a lot of like foreign stuff, like imported stuff, right? Stuart, like NG,
yeah,
right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's Stuart NG. Yeah, Stuart Ng. He does a lot of overseas books and whatever, but he also does a lot of the sketchbooks of the artists around and stuff. And he carries all of House of Secrets sketchbooks.
Oh, okay.
So.
And so, can I ask you, because when I was watching you work at WonderCon, it seems like you were doing a decent amount of, like, color work. What were you working in? Were you just, what sort of medium were you using? Because I was just kind of watching, but it was so crowded that it was hard for me to focus on, like, exactly what you were doing, so.
Usually I use markers.
Uh-huh.
They're called Copic markers.
Okay.
For the main color, and then I'll come in later and do some Prismacolor for softening it and stuff. I'm not, an expert with markers as I should be, but, I kind of use the Prismacolors to kind of help give another dimension to it.
Gotcha. And you've also been working on, like, the Young Reader series, a lot of stuff for, like, DC Comics, right? Is that correct?
Yes, I do a lot of books for HarperCollins, kids, a lot of Batman books, and now I just finished a Man of Steel book based on the movie.
Oh, really?
And now working on, they're moving into a JLA line of books. I just finished a Green Lantern one, and I'm supposed to start a Flash book pretty soon.
So. Oh, wow, that's great. So they're kind of expanding, because before it's been sort of just like Superman and Batman, maybe Wonder Woman thrown in there, right?
Right. Yeah, it's mainly Superman and Batman, and then it would be, Wonder Woman would sometimes guest, or they'd throw in one or the other as an additional character, whatever. So, but I also finished a one that's supposed to be just a JLA where they're fighting Starro.
Oh, great.
You've got the whole bunch, Aquaman, Flash, Green Lantern, Martian Manhunter, Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman in it, so it's kind of fun.
Now, is that maybe the first time you've drawn all those characters? I mean, as far as for, like, professionally, or?
Yeah, actually, I think it's the first time I've ever drawn Aquaman, and first time I've done Martian Manhunter, I think, professionally.
Uh-huh.
Some of the others I've done for other reasons, but, you know, that's the first time I've done them all together in a group for sure, and those specific characters in E.
Oh, that's great. And so how did you, because like I said in the previous interview, to me you're kind of more known as an animation professional, you know, working in animation. How did you get into sort of that young reader series of books? Because I think they're great, and I think they're really great for, like, younger kids, maybe to expose them to at least the, you know, the properties, the characters, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's kind of typical in this business. It's who you know.
Yeah.
One of the art editors at HarperCollins used to be one of the storyboard artists on X-Men Evolution. He didn't work for me, but he worked for one of the other directors. And I think it was during the time of the last X-Men movie,
the third one or First Class?
Yeah, the third one of the first three, not the more recent one.
Yeah.
And they were looking for a couple of artists to help them get them done, I think. And he checked on a long shot, talked to me and Boyd Kirkland about doing a couple of them, and I've been doing them pretty much ever since.
Yeah. So. And so you are given the story and you illustrate it, and you had said that you don't color them yourself. You have your son helping you?
Yeah, he does most of the color. I'll do it every now and then. I used to do it definitely earlier at the beginning, like on those X-Men books.
Uh-huh.
But he's been doing most of the color work for me ever since, so. He's much better at it than him, and it gives him a little bit of work while he's going to school. So,
gotcha. Oh, that's great. And he's studying art as well.
He's going to the Art Institute in Portland.
Oh, great! So he's still in school.
Yes.
He's going to follow in your footsteps, though. That's great.
I hope he does better than me. So.
Well, I don't know. In my opinion, it would be hard to do better. I mean, I'm a big fan. Again, I think I've said that the third time this interview. So you mentioned X-Men Evolution. Can you talk a little bit how you sort of got into that? Because that's sort of what I came to know you from. I remember watching that series and really liking how much different it looked than everything else that was on TV at the time, especially like superhero stuff. How did you come to join up with that project or become involved in it?
Well, like at least typical in my experience in animation business, it's all about who you know.
Yeah.
And I'd been working off and on previously with Boyd Kirkland, who is the producer of X-Men Evolution,
uh-huh.
on other projects. I did some stuff for him on Batman Sub-Zero. And even before then, we'd worked together off and on different things. And this was a situation where we were both working at a place called Saban on different projects. And he left Saban to go work on X-Men Evolution, and he lured me over with an offer to go work for him as a director
mm-hmm.
on X-Men Evolution, even though it wasn't called that then. And from there, me and the two other directors and Boyd, we all kind of spitballed and tried to come up with different design work and thinking on the characters. And eventually, mine started to be the obvious way to go, I guess, at least everyone liked it best, and so I just kept going from there as, you know, doing the dual job of director and character designer.
Uh-huh. And so your designs just kind of took over the project? I mean, they really liked what you were doing? Because, I mean, that seems to be pretty much all you, X-Men Evolution, I mean, as far as the design is concerned.
Yeah, initially some of the earlier drawings, costumes, Frank Parr, one of the other directors, came up with a few of them, like I think for Cyclops, that was partially or mostly his, and even some of the others here and there he was involved in, because at that point, part of my problem was I was so unfamiliar with the X-Men. It'd been years and years since I'd read any X-Men comics or any comics in general that, you know, he had a better base of understanding of what those characters were than I did, and it took me a while to kind of shift gears into that. So, but once I did, and I kind of revamped what he had done and went from there, I became basically the sole character designer of the entire four seasons.
Uh-huh.
I mean, every now and then I'd use someone to help with a few crowd shots here and there, but mostly it was me.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's great. So do you think your unfamiliarity with the X-Men sort of world or franchise kind of helped you in redesigning those, kind of coming from a blank slate?
Yeah, I think it allowed me not to have too much reverence for what had been done previously. If anything, you know, I was familiar with the 90s show, the Fox show.
Yeah.
And only somewhat familiar. Knew that wasn't what I wanted to do, and no one else wanted to do, thankfully, on this show. And so I just kind of started from the ground up, as if the characters hadn't really existed, per se.
Yeah.
And some of the fans didn't care for that initially, but I think eventually they warmed up to it quite a bit.
Yeah, you guys got some flack, I think, in the very beginning of the project. Can you speak to that at all, or like how you handled that, or was it, do you just ignore that sort of thing?
Well, I mean, we were somewhat aware of it, but you got to remember this was before the internet was quite as full blown as it is now.
Yeah.
And so we weren't seeing it quite as aggressive. I mean, if we were to come out, I think, with a show that so diverged from canon now, and you'd get instant feedback overnight.
Yeah.
Back then, you know, we'd hear stuff and would, you know, see some message board stuff, but it wasn't quite the same thing. But we kind of knew, because we also, you know, expected to get that type of reaction from the hardcore fans.
Uh-huh.
You know, so we did what we could to make it enjoyable for us, and hope that it would translate into eventually winning over even the hardcore fans, and I think we did to a large degree. I don't know that too many people complain about X-Men Evolution anymore. I don't think it gets that type of flack.
Yeah, no.
I think it seems to, in fact, a lot of it has become part of the X-Men canon, in fact, the things we came up with.
Yeah. It seems like you drew on a lot of the past, and, you know, I think a lot of why it became such a fan favorite to certain people, especially like me, is that it was kind of starting fresh, because the X-Men had been so convoluted for so long, and it took it down a familiar road. But I remember saying in the first interview that we did together, where I had watched the first episode, the first couple episodes, and then watched the last couple of episodes, and I was fascinated with how much it kind of had its own continuity, which is something I don't think a lot of animated shows had at the time, like a solid continuity, you know, where A goes to B, goes to C, and then how much the show kind of changed from beginning to end. Was that part of the original plan? Like, I know you guys were working to get through the first season, but once you got the next season, did sort of a plan develop to change, or how did that happen?
Yeah, well, like you said, first season we were just trying to get through it. But
uh-huh.
Boyd was a big fan of Joss Whedon, and he liked how Joss Whedon kind of planned Buffy, where each season was about something. And uh-huh. so he kind of pushed in that direction. So, you know, each season had sort of, this is what we're going to try to accomplish, you know, feel to it. And I think that had something going for it, and everyone agreed and was on board for that. Now it's very difficult to do that type of thing because everyone wants more standalone episodes.
Oh.
You know, they don't want overarching character plots. And so it'd be probably a little more difficult to do these days, at least it seems to be.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, in those days they were very happy with us doing a series continuity.
Oh, you know. Wow. Yeah, I thought it was really great how the show developed. And I remember I went back and I looked into which episode was the first one you directed, and I think that was the introduction of Rogue, right? Rogue Recruit?
Right.
Yeah, and
I was very happy to have that as my first one because, you know, I knew very, very little about her.
Uh-huh.
At the time, you know, my familiarity with the X-Men was the Kirby Stan Lee era.
Uh-huh.
You know, when it was just the main core group.
Mm-hmm.
Before Beast turned blue and all that other stuff.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
You know, I had very little understanding, and, you know, and a lot of the flack we caught with Rogue was all the, how dare she not have Miss Marvel's powers and stuff like that, and that didn't mean anything at all to me.
That's great.
It was fun to kind of re-flavor her and turn her, get her away from being this Southern belle with that hokey Dolly Parton hairdo and accent. And,
uh-huh.
You know, all the, you know, superwoman powers that she has in the comics. And it was nice to strip her back down to her beginnings. And we decided to make her trailer trash. We thought that was the right way to go, you know, keep her kind of an individual and afraid of being with people, and, you know, make her goth, and, you know, it just seemed to all kind of gel together cool. And,
yeah.
You know, it seems she is one of the favorite characters of most fans of that show. So.
Yeah, yeah, she's definitely one of my favorites, and I think that is one of the episodes I distinctly remember watching on TV the first time and thinking, oh, what a good idea, because the fact that she would be goth or whatever alternative and kind of that sort of person makes sense that she would wear, you know, head-to-toe clothing, you know, where she wouldn't want to touch anybody, you know?
Right, that was definitely one of the plans, is that, you know, the lack of skin, but we still wanted to kind of make her trashy too, and
yeah.
So I mean, there are certain a lot of things that went into it that made her a real interesting character, and the fact that she was goth and so off the beaten path, it kind of made a great contrast between her, Scott, and Jean.
Yeah, that's great. And so, would you say, did any, as you were developing the show, did and or even went through the four seasons? Correct, four.
Yeah, there were four seasons.
Did any character, did you develop like an affinity for any one particular character? Was it Rogue, or like who became sort of your favorite down the line? Did you have one?
I liked all of them for different reasons, but I really liked, it's more what we came up with that I liked.
Uh-huh.
Particularly. The further off the beaten path, the further away from canon, the more I liked that particular character.
Yeah,
Rogue was definitely one of them. I think what we did with Wanda was really cool. I enjoyed the whole idea of her being institutionalized and being crazy and angry, and, you know, and everyone afraid of her, even her father. I mean, I know that that's become somewhat more part of canon now, but we were, as far as I know, the ones who came up with that original concept for her.
Yeah.
And, you know, and some of the other characters that are similar to that, you know, to some degree, it's difficult for me to say exactly which ones are my favorites, but, you know, the ones that we went further away from canon, I think, are definitely in there.
Sure. And did you have any particular favorite episode or series of episodes at all?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I like the ones with, I think the one that I did with Kurt discovering who his mother was.
Uh-huh.
Nightcrawler discovering that Mystique was his mother. That, I think that was a good episode.
Uh-huh.
I'm trying to think. offhand, I haven't thought too much about them.
it's been a while, I know.
Yeah, there were. Yeah, I like the Boom Boom and Kitty, not Kitty. Boom Boom and Kurt episode. Quite. Although the animation fell flat on that one, but I think the actual story and the continuity was cool.
Yeah.
Of what the interaction between the two characters, and I also like the Joyride episode where the recruits.
Oh yeah.
Took the X-plane and took off and got all goofed up and had to kind of deal with things on their own. I thought that was a fun episode.
Oh yeah. Well, to anyone listening out there, it's available on Netflix, as far as I know, all four seasons, and I think it's a fantastic show. It's just like a great little, capsule of like the X-Men without having to deal with crossovers, and if you can just deal like with what the comics do, where it's, its own universe and it's self-contained, and you don't have to deal with knowing, so many other things from so many other places. I think it's a great show. But this kind of leads me a little bit to Wolverine and the X-Men, which you say, isn't a sequel at all to X-Men Evolution, correct?
Right. That it was never intended to be. I know some people have debated that and still argue about that online, but it was never intended to be continuity with X-Men Evolution. Right.
Wow.
I mean, I wasn't even a character designer on Wolverine and the X-Men. I was just officially one of the directors. But I, as far as character design, I helped out with expressions and attitudes, but those weren't my character designs, and they came completely from a different source and different frame of mind. So
I gotta say, like I said before, that just astounds me, because I think so much of your imprint is on that series. It seems so much like what you did with X-Men Evolution. So they didn't use that as a template at all. They just said, this is completely new?
Yeah, that was the intent, is to start a fresh take on the X-Men. And in fact, we weren't even involved. Boyd Kirkland and myself weren't even involved initially when they first started putting the show together.
Uh-huh.
There was a whole different, for one reason or another, couldn't continue, and they brought Boyd in, he brought me in, and we kind of took it over and finished it off.
Uh-huh.
So.
So did you stay with the duration of the show, or did you?
I was there from the very beginning. Once some of the development work had been done by the previous crew.
Uh-huh.
And we kind of came in after the fact when they couldn't seem to get the show up on its legs.
Oh.
So we were there from the very first episode that you've seen on TV or on video.
Uh-huh.
All the way through to the end. But there was work done prior to that influenced what we had done. And most of the scripts had been written by that point and so forth. So we were kind of a little more less hands-on than we were with X-Men Evolution, whereas in X-Men Evolution, we were actually going to lunch, the directors and the producer, and working out script ideas, where in this case, the scripts were, here's your script, try to make this work,
uh-huh,
type of thing.
Oh, but
it was a whole different thing.
So, it's different than running the show, but it seems like you guys, kind of came in and, helped a lot, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. What we did to it was a lot of work, without a doubt. It's just, like I said, it was a little bit different in the process and a little bit different than how we handled X-Men Evolution, which we had our fingers in all the way from the beginning.
Gotcha.
It's just, you're shaping something that's been handed to you.
Yeah.
So.
And, so I thought I had heard that there was going to be a second season, but that just fell through, or of Wolverine and the X-Men?
Yeah, there was supposed to be a second season. Boyd and I started work on development on it. We even started, I guess, a couple of the scripts were written. I know some of the treatments were written, but it fell apart. There was a money issue.
Uh-huh.
Everyone wanted, but the people that had put up the money for the first season, who had to put up the money for the second season, somehow couldn't get their act together, you know, which is strange, but it happened.
Oh, that's too bad. Because I really loved, I mean, I loved both shows. I thought Wolverine and the X-Men was great, and X-Men Evolution. I guess, how much input on X-Men Evolution did Marvel actually have? Were they guiding you at all, or did they say, like, do this, don't do this, or were you guys just given carte blanche?
Well, they gave us certain guidelines. They were not that involved, as you would think, on X-Men Evolution. Mm-hmm. They gave us a liaison. We haven't had an executive producer who, you know, he wasn't that concerned. Uh-huh. I mean, he was, mm-hmm. you know, he trusted us and let us go with it. And at that point, yeah, remember the first X-Men movie hadn't even come out yet. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, we were, in fact, some of the things they did ask us for on X-Men Evolution were to, you know, refer to the movie, which they wouldn't give us any information on.
Oh, really?
You know, like, get our Sabretooth, or my Sabretooth. They said, gee, we'd like him in an overcoat. Why? Well, he's got that in the movie. But why don't you show me what he looks like in the movie? No, we can't do that.
Oh.
You know, that type of stuff. You know, one of the things that was important to them, to Avi Arad, who was in charge at that point, but only peripherally interested in what we were doing, was that Wolverine have a certain type of hairstyle, which I guess he was kind of the same way on the film.
Uh-huh.
You know, he paid attention to what Wolverine's hairstyle looked like than almost anything else.
Oh, so. Wow. Oh, that's interesting. So you guys started developing the show, and the movie was going to come out, or they were shooting it, or?
Yeah, they were, they might even have finished shooting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Shooting the film, but you know, at that point we hadn't seen much in the way of images, or you know, we didn't know what they were doing. But it kind of back-filtered into influence what Marvel expected of us to some degree,
uh-huh.
and that might have had something to do with why certain characters were put in the film. I don't, or in our series, you know, I don't want to overemphasize that because it was very little that they said, gee, put Sabretooth in an overcoat.
Sure,
you know, that type
sure.
of stuff. So didn't affect us all that much.
Gotcha.
You know, obviously, if you look at our Mystique and the film Mystique, they gave us no clue at all what she was going to look like in the film, or we would have done something different, I think.
Yeah. Well, she looks a lot like in the comics.
Yeah, if you look towards the end of the season and then the following seasons, we kind of went more towards that, but we had no idea. Yeah, we followed more of the comic thing, and she was one of the characters that, design-wise, in her costume, I wasn't all that thrilled with, but we couldn't come up with anything at that point in time that everyone would sign off on, so the comic seemed to be a good fallback position on her design.
Gotcha. Yeah, I would think it would be hard to do almost a fully nude character on a Saturday morning cartoon, which is almost what Mystique was in the movies.
Right. And yeah, like I said, they didn't even give us any guidelines or any indication that's what it was in the film.
Oh, that's good. So then after X-Men Evolution, did you start working on Ultimate Avengers immediately, or how did that develop?
There were probably jobs in between. I'm trying to think what I did. I'd have to get up my IMDb.
Oh, no. I mean, I don't mean give me a list of credits, but I'm saying, you went off and maybe worked on some other stuff, and then was it the same group of producers that were like, hey, we're going to work on this. Do you want to work on this? Like that sort of thing?
Yeah, what happened on Ultimate Avengers is Boyd Kirkland had gotten together with Craig Kyle, and they were trying to develop these direct-to-videos as a series.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've been trying for quite a while, and finally Marvel gave them the green light to do that.
Uh-huh.
And they opted for Ultimate Avengers as the first one, because that was kind of around the time that comic had come out, you know, a little bit after, obviously, and everyone was really excited about what Brian Hitch and Millar had done with that.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of really in everyone's thinking right then.
Uh-huh.
And so that's what they went with, and Boyd once again hired me to be a director and character designer on that, because at that point he knew I could probably pull it off. So
yeah. So how difficult was it to, because I know that that sort of release got a little bit, like I said in our first talk, disparaged, because I think the expectations that Marvel put out were, you know, this is going to be Brian Hitch animated. The artwork is going to look exactly the same, and you know, it's going to be the comic book. You're not going to be disappointed. They kind of like amped expectations, and then when it came out, you know, I think a lot of people unfairly judged it. Me being one of them, I mean, I'll admit, like, I was expecting something different. I watched it in preparation for this interview, and I was like, oh, this is, you know, I was really too hard on this when it came out. Can you speak to that a little bit? Like, what direction were you given? Did they just say, follow the story, or here's Brian Hitch's artwork, or you just go on your own and develop your own, you know, do it in your own style like you had, or?
Well, the story was separate. The issues with the story were separate from the character design issues.
Sure.
I understand what they were trying to do with the story is they didn't. If you're familiar with what they did, Millard wrote in the Ultimate Avengers, they didn't want to quite go that far. In fact, Avi Arad was definitely not interested in going there with the wife beating and the the other over-the-top things, you know, obviously Hulk, you know, screaming at Betty about wanting to have sex with her wasn't going to fly.
Yeah.
That was other issues. So they pulled it back more to the, I guess, what is referred to as the 616 canon or whatever of Avengers, pulled it a little bit closer towards that. As far as character design goes, what I was trying to do was find a way to match in animation what he did without following his design work, because his stuff looked great in a graphic comic novel look, but there was no consistency to it per se.
Uh-huh.
It was kind of all over the. I mean, he used photographs, which is fine.
Yeah,
and stuff. I have a problem with that, but sometimes it used different photos for the same character of different people.
Sure.
Just because he happened to have that as the reference, and he was using the angle and the lighting and stuff and so forth. So, you know, I had to come up with a consistency that we could animate. So what I did, which I did to some degree in X-Men Evolution too, which is I chose actors that I wanted for each of the characters.
Uh-huh.
And I followed them to a large degree, which, in a way, you know, was what he had done, other than I don't think he necessarily used actors, other than the obvious
Samuel Nick Jackson.
Fury,
yeah.
Which makes Jackson the luckiest man in the world now.
Yeah.
In fact, that was one thing we were told, like, you can't use Jackson, Samuel Jackson,
Nick
Fury. Said because we're afraid he's going to sue us.
Oh, wow.
Because they were hoping that, you know, at that point they were thinking, well, maybe he hasn't seen the comics and doesn't know they exist, so we're skating by there. But if you do the same thing and use Samuel Jackson for Nick Fury in this, we might be in trouble.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, so I had to choose a different actor for Nick Fury.
Yeah.
And followed that. So I kind of did that same thing. There was a lot of casting that we went through before we settled on who we wanted, and then I took them, much like I did in X-Men Evolution, and kind of turned them into animation characters. Yeah, I didn't quite use the same caricaturing that I did in X-Men Evolution. I made it a little straighter.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, it seemed to work out okay overall. You know, it's, you know, kind of hit and miss whenever you do that type of thing. Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, depending on the character.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because it seems like, I think it's rated PG-13, but when I was watching it, I couldn't think of any reason why it would be PG-13, if anything, PG. I mean, can you speak to any of that at all? Do you think it deserved that rating?
If it was PG-13, I don't recall that being the case, because I agree with you. I don't think it was PG-13.
Yeah, I don't... I don't think
the violence was anything worse than what I mean. Some of the violence we couldn't have done on TV, but sure. in direct-to-video, sure. there's no issue. I think you don't have standards and practices saying no fists in the head or you know
yeah.
certain things you can't on TV, but we didn't have that issue on this. So
yeah,
I don't know. I suspect that they probably decided to declare it PG-13 on their own just to kind of raise the adult fan level, maybe.
Sure.
I don't know.
Sure. Sure. And so you said that you, and I know I've read this on your blog, that you use actors. Like, how does that, do you have, like, favorite actors that you go to, or, like, from just TV and movies, or do you have actor friends that you use, like models at all, or people's likenesses in your life, or how do you go about that? Because that's interesting.
Well, it varies. I mean, you know, usually it's not. I don't go back and reuse the same actor. You know, like trying to think of a good, obvious one. Scott. The Cyclops, it was, I'm blanking on his name now. He was an actor that was in Election.
I think I know who you're talking about. I think it's like Chris, I can look it up, but...
Chris Pine used as the basis for Scott. And usually, it's not so much actors that I really like or... It's just an actor that I think, okay, that suits this character. And not necessarily personality-wise, just look-wise sometimes.
Sure.
You know, sometimes the personality will come through and be part of it, too. Or sometimes it'll be a compilation of actors.
Yeah.
Like for Wasp in Ultimate Avengers, she was actually two actors, actresses. One actually was a... porn actress.
Whoa, that, really?
That suggested to me. And then another one was, that was for her face. And then another one was for a different actress. Someone said this would make a good body type. And, you know, sometimes there's a little of that type of thing happening.
No, I got to stop you because you said porn actress for Wasp. I think everyone out there is going to want to know who that was.
I can't recall her name offhand. Just know it was very difficult finding expressions on her where I could put it up on the computer screen.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Wow, that's heavy. So wait, okay, I'll let that go. Captain America. Who? That's what I'm curious about because I actually have the maquette for Captain America. I have Wolverine.
Oh, Maximum Evolution?
Yeah.
I'm talking about the Ultimate Avengers Captain America.
So they're two different.
Captain Evolution, that was a straight design without... that. He wasn't based on... And that was just straight out of my head. But Ultimate Avengers, it was the actor from the original CSI. I don't know his name offhand. He was the kind of the big homeboy.
Original
character.
CSI? Hold on,
yeah,
I'm typing.
Yeah, let me... I'll dig it up.
Gosh, CSI, Masters of Horror. I don't. Yeah, I can't. There's so many CSIs that I can't locate like one particular one.
No.
But that's.
He might not even be on the show any longer. George Eads.
What's that?
Yeah, I used him for the face.
Uh huh.
And I found some weightlifter or bodybuilder that I used for the body.
Oh wow! So you even. You even use likenesses of just, like you had said, like with the Wasp, like you use a different body type, like you go that far. That's pretty great.
Sometimes, yeah. I mean, it's not the case for every character, but often. You know, where it's like, well, I really like this guy's acting and his face and his expression, so I'm going to base it on that. And then, but the body is not right. You know, it needs to be pumped up instead. And sometimes it makes it for more consistency. So if you actually use someone else's body and stuff, so.
Oh wow!
Sounds like cheating, I know, but you know, it's especially for that type of show.
Yeah.
And since we wanted to imitate what Brian Hitch had brought to the comic, that seemed like the soundest way to do it.
Yeah. Oh, wow. And is it hard for you to find, like, if you have an actor, is it hard for you to find body reference on that? Because, I mean, superheroes, they're not wearing clothes per se, right? I mean, they're, it's kind of skin tight.
Well, it, you know, like I said, I didn't do it for every actor, every character. It's just, those are the two that definitely had that going for them. And sometimes it was just like, okay, well, I know what the body type is, and I'm just going to create it out of my head.
Sure.
But in those cases, I was looking for something specific.
Yeah.
You know, for Captain America, you wanted that overdeveloped, you know, but natural-looking body type that, you know, I guess he wasn't a weightlifter. I think he was a power builder or something. I think he was Polish, some award-winning bodybuilder or something.
Gotcha.
And in the case of Wasp, that was just... I think that was her body type was chosen just because I think that's where everyone's head was. Yeah,
gotcha.
Everyone wanted to have input. So
you were not into comics before you got into X-Men Evolution. I mean, you had read them when you were younger. I know that that's something we talked about in the first interview, but you had kind of like dropped out of them. Do you read comics now at all, or did you get back into them once you've gotten into all these shows? Or,
well, to some degree, you know, if I'm, for example, if I, when I was on Wolverine and the X-Men, I bought a lot of X-Men comics.
Yeah.
And trade paperbacks. Mm-hmm. Usually I tend to lean towards the trade paperbacks, not the individual comics.
Yeah.
But every now and then I'll pick up a comic or something, you know, if something looks interesting, or, you know, there's certain artists that I like, and if I see something of theirs, I'll pick it up, like Stuart Immonen and, or Frank Cho or something like that, you know, or Adam Hughes, whenever he does a comic, which is rare.
Yeah.
So, and a lot of times I'll just fly around online and look at art that these artists are doing currently and stuff.
Sure, sure.
But I haven't really got back into comics per se.
Uh-huh.
Other than, you know, now and then I'll pick up a graphic novel or trade paperback and go through that if it looks interesting.
Sure. Do you have any sort of favorites that you've read, like, over the years? Anything stick out to you? Any big, or anything recent that you read that you really enjoyed?
Well, there's been a few. You know, like, I really enjoyed Stuart Immonen's Next Wave, I think it was called.
Oh, yeah, Next Wave.
And, you know, I really enjoyed the artwork, and I like the humor, too, in it. But, there's several like that. You know, like, obviously, I like, currently, you know, I like Black Sad, American Vampire.
Oh, yeah, American Vampire. I got to pick that book up. I hear it's really good.
Yeah, he's got several of them.
Uh-huh.
And I like that. Those. There's a couple others like that I'm blabbing right now. Lock and Key, I think, is good.
What was that?
Lock and Key.
Oh,
that's
Lock and
Joe
Key.
Hill.
Yeah, I've never read that either. That's something I've been meaning to pick up. It seems like those are kind of maybe a little more horror-oriented. Are you into horror movies and stuff like that? Or
Actually, no. Actually, I'm not. I'm just,
oh, really?
I guess I'm less into the superhero stuff than you would imagine, I guess.
Oh, really? Oh, wow. Oh, that's great. And
although, I do pick those up every now and then, too. So it just depends.
Gotcha. So let me, before we run out of time... let me ask you about how you got into animation, because I think it's a really good story. I mean, you did not necessarily go to art school.
No, I didn't go to art school, which I regret now to some degree. But I was getting prepared to go to art school. I was in high school, and it was my senior year, and I think I was taking individual study with my art teacher, trying to get a portfolio ready to submit to Art Center of Pasadena. Mm-hmm. And she happened to come across in a trade paper a request for portfolios.
Sure.
They wanted to look at portfolios, and she thought, oh, this would be a great way for you to put together what you think is your portfolio, submit it, and for you to get a professional critique.
Yeah.
And, you know, she thought that might humble me a little bit, and because I guess I was pretty cocky, as most kids in high school are, who, you know, the artist in high school or whatever. There's always one or two that are really hot, and you know, they think they're pretty cool, I guess. And uh-huh. So I wanted to kind of take a notch or two, and so I submitted a portfolio, and it was with Ralph Bakshi Productions.
Mm-hmm.
They were working Lord of the Rings and trying to hire anyone they could almost to just help finish the film.
Sure.
And so it turns out that she was wrong on both accounts, that I didn't get, they were not going to give a professional review.
Oh.
You know, or critique. I mean, that's frankly not something anyone does these days. I guess she didn't understand that. She was kind of hoping they would, or maybe she was just hoping to reject it, and then she could tell me why. And it turns out that I ended up getting the job and hired, and they, this, her and my counselors did whatever they could to figure out how I could get the job, or keep the job, and still go to school and graduate. So I ended, you know, they ended up making it up so that I would go. I went to adult school to finish off what few credits I needed, and you know, and I was warned and suggested not to let them know how young I was, because I was only 17 at the time.
Oh, so you were still in high school, like when you started working in animation?
Yeah, I was. I had not graduated from high school yet. I was still probably, you know, 6 months away from that.
Oh my gosh, so. That's impressive. I mean, at least to me, I mean, that's incredible. Because when we talked first, I thought that you had maybe graduated from high school and then done that. But you were still in high school.
Yeah, I was still doing whatever I was still taking whatever classes and I needed and to get my credits. And this was one of the classes, was the art class, was trying to get my portfolio together so I could submit it.
Yeah.
To center. And it kind of all blew up from there. So, and you know, they were more than glad to help me try to work it out.
Oh, that's great. So when you got the job, were you just blown away? I mean, everyone was just blown away? Were you just like, yeah, of course I got in? Like,
no, I had no clue. You know, I was a 17-year-old kid.
Yeah.
I had no idea. When I got the job, I did follow the advice and not tell anyone I was 17, which is good, because when Ralph finally found out, he said he wouldn't have hired me.
Oh.
Early at that point. But at that point, he didn't care. But it was pretty amazing, though, to see all the other people that were there that were even hired at the same time as I was. And I realized he must have seen something in my book, because I was looking at everyone else's portfolio and thinking, I really had no business being there.
Oh, really?
You know, the other people had gone to, you know, art school, and you know, they actually knew what the hell they were doing. I was just some kid in high school who, you know, I could render with a pencil a little bit, or I could, you know, I didn't have any training whatsoever. And, but thankfully for what animation called for in those days, I didn't need to.
Yeah. So. What did you start off doing there? Like, what did they have you doing?
Well, initially we were, if you're familiar with the Bakshi's Lord of the Rings,
yeah.
There was the way he handled the orcs and some of those characters was with what we called rotophotos, which is he'd shoot the live action and print individual frames onto photographic paper and peg them, mm-hmm. and then we would go over those frames and add things to it, like toes, you know, clawed toes and horns or teeth, you know, dependent, you know, with a grease pencil or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as things went along, he tried to do more and more things like that. Sometimes it was successful, sometimes it wasn't. And I had the knack or the luck of being always available when he wanted to try something new.
Uh-huh.
And so I always ended up doing that. And then at some point, and I'm not even sure why, yeah, he decided that I was right or primed to try in between, actual in between. So
yeah.
He assigned me to an animator who needed someone, or maybe the animator needed someone and I happened to be available once again or something.
Yeah.
So, you know, I had to, you know, I started to learn to in between poorly. I was never very good at it. And then Ralph decided to hand me this huge scene that I don't think he thought anyone would be able to get through, of Aragorn and Gandalf riding these horses. It was like, I don't know how long, it was like 100 feet or something, which, if you know film terms, that's quite a long scene. And he gave it to me, and I just slowly made my way through it. And so, I don't know that I was the youngest person to get into animation, but I think I was probably the youngest person to get an animation screen credit as an animator.
Oh, wow. So. Oh, that's great. So, were you, like, in heaven when you got there? Was it just like, oh, and, like, were you into that sort of, you know, Dungeons and Dragons, sort of, like, sword and sorcery stuff at all? Like, were you like, I'm working in animation, and I'm working on the Lord of the, like, was there any of that, or were you just like, I just got a job?
Well, no, there was some, not exactly, but, you know, I was into sword and sorcery. I loved the Frazetta stuff.
Yeah.
And that was, like, my benchmark for everything was Frazetta.
Yeah.
And, you know, Jeff Jones and stuff. I always thought, oh, I'm going to become an illustrator. Cause I had no interest in getting into animation.
Oh,
that
really?
Was not something even in my vision at all. But I was going to get into illustration. And I thought, okay, well, this would be fine. You know, I'll get into animation for a while, and then I'll go back to school, or go to school and become the illustrator I was always meant to be. And, you know, it's very difficult to get out of animation once you're in it. It's just, the pay is too good, and, you know, if you're good at it, you keep working, and as opposed to struggling as an illustrator, that's a much more difficult life.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Well.
So, but as far as Lord of the Rings, yeah, I wasn't that big a fan of Lord of the Rings. In fact, until I got on the movie and actually had visuals for the characters, I had trouble reading the books, so it didn't really land with me. I was more into the Conan books and the Edgar Burroughs books and those types of things. Romantic sword and sorcery, I guess.
Oh, you didn't see those going hand in hand. Basically, they were kind of two different subsets of a... Not at all.
No, okay. I will say that before I submitted my portfolio and stuff, I'd gone to see Wizards, coincidentally.
Oh.
You know, actually, a film prior to Lord of the Rings, and really thought that was great. That was the first time I'd seen anything that spoke to me as an artist. And, you know, a lot of it was the Mike Plume drawings and so forth. And so, but I still, even at that point, didn't think, oh, I should get into animation. You know, that I just really enjoyed it for animation. Up until then, it had either been, Disney stuff or TV stuff, or, you know, it just didn't do anything for me. That was the first time I actually thought, oh, this is pretty cool.
Yeah.
So, no idea that I'd be working for him, but working with some of the same people.
Oh, wow. Well, that's great. And I know that we're pretty much out of time. I don't want to take you for granted. So you've got the Kickstarter, and it's called The Craver. And what show are you working on now?
Currently, I'm a director on a show called NFL Rush Zone.
Oh, that's right.
I think it's on Nicktoons.
Uh-huh.
So I'm working on that. And I'm doing, some of those HarperCollins books.
Yes.
And I'm also working on a couple of graphic novels for a subsidiary of, or an imprint of Dark Horse, I guess is the way you put it, are based on, a couple of them are based on Edgar Rice Burroughs books and on old pulp novels. And also working on a graphic novel for House of Secrets as well. So,
oh, like an original graphic novel?
Yeah, they've actually come up with some graphic novels that they've done on their own and stuff and printed and sell in their store.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I'm helping out. Yeah.
Oh, because I work nearby them. Maybe I'll have to go check out and see what they're...
This is the second one in this line. The first, I think it's called All Crime, kind of film noir type stuff, so...
Oh, and what's the second one going to be? Can you talk about it at all, or you just need to wait till it comes out?
It's just a continuation of the... It's same thing. It's film noir, same characters. I think it's still... It's a crime novel. or crime. And called All Crime, I believe.
All Crime. And are you doing the whole thing, or is it like a anthology series?
I think, well, from what I understand, I'm doing two-thirds of it.
Oh, okay, so great. Well, that's great.
There's a beginning and an end, in the, which I'm doing, and then there's like a flashback section or something in the middle.
Oh, great.
Some other artist is working on it.
Oh, okay. And you will be at WonderCon once again at the end of March.
Yeah, yes.
And Comic-Con?
Comic-Con's, I've got my name submitted for an Artist Alley table, but as of this point, I don't have one, so it could change. It's a long way away from now.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes people call out and they go to their list.
Sure.
So we'll see. At this point, I do not. I'll probably be at Comic-Con doing something or another, maybe just wandering around, or maybe there'll be a panel like last year.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Oh, okay. And I'm sorry, there was another convention in between those two that you had wanted to say, or?
Yeah, Big WoW up in San Jose.
Okay. Great.
So that's supposed to be. I've never been there, but I've heard good things about it.
Oh, great, great. Well, so you'll be busy at the convention on the conventions. Well, if I see you at WonderCon, I want to treat you to lunch or pay for your lunch. You know, whatever. I think I'm going to be there Saturday. You don't have to have lunch with me, but I'll bring it over to your table or whatever. Thank you so much for doing this. It's this one definitely recorded. You will not. I will not bother you again. I promise. Except to maybe get a commission or an original sketch. To hound you at your table. But I owe you food or at least something. So thank you so much for doing this.
You're welcome. And no problem at all.
I'm a really, really, really big fan of your work, and now I'll never be able to look at the Wasp the same again.
Yeah, just trying to figure out who she is now.
I don't watch that much porn. I don't think. Anyway, well, I'll let you go.
I don't. Like I said, she was submitted to me as, here, use her. This is a great actor. I mean, she's Asian, if that helps.
Okay, well, if you remember, please send me a message through, you know, and let me know, because it's just killing me. But, you know, thanks for doing this. And like I said in the beginning, you're a saint. You're a gentleman and a scholar, and I love your work, so thanks very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Hard time, sad boy.